Hey, and welcome to this second episode of the Knowledge Force Hypothesis Podcast. In this episode, we are embarking on an interesting journey. We are going to cover thousands of years of complex cultural and scientific thought in a single episode. Flowing through time and across cultures, ancient cosmologies, indigenous traditions, and philosophical ideas from around the world, from the earliest cultures to modern theories, uncovering how each may echo the core principles of our bold thought experiment, the knowledge force hypothesis.
Mark, that sounds incredibly broad. Can you give a more precise idea of which traditions and time periods we'll be diving into?
Sure, Archie, of course. We'll journey through a wide range of examples to see how different cultures have perceived knowledge and its role in the universe. Specifically, we'll be touching on Aboriginal Australian traditions, Native American cosmologies, old European tribal beliefs, and several African traditions. Then, we'll move on to ancient Egyptian, Mayan, Aztec, and Incan worldviews. From there, we'll examine Greek and Chinese philosophy, Indian thought, and Arabic scholarship from the Golden Age. And finally, we'll wrap up with modern cosmological theories from thinkers like Roger Penrose and Lee Smolin, alongside principles of information conservation and new wave ideas from complexity science. Yes, we have quite a journey ahead. But before we dive into all these fascinating ancient cosmologies and philosophies, let's pause for a moment, because listeners might be wondering, why exactly are we exploring all these stories? What's the thread connecting it all?
Good point, Mark. It can feel like a huge, overwhelming journey. So what's the deal? What connects all these traditions and philosophies with the knowledge force hypothesis?
Well, here's the thing. All these cultures and traditions, no matter how diverse or distant in time and place, share a similar intuition. They all understood knowledge not as something static or isolated, but as something alive and dynamic, something that gets passed down, something that evolves, grows, and accumulates over generations.
Ah, interesting. So you're saying that the reason we're looking at these diverse examples is because they all hint at the same core idea, that knowledge is kind of flowing through human experience, shaping us as much as we shape it.
Right. And since we still talk about these ancient cultures thousands of years later, knowledge clearly has remarkable longevity. And to be more specifically, these stories beautifully illustrate the SRACL factors from our hypothesis: substrate, receptivity, agency, connectivity, and longevity. Think about it. Knowledge was encoded and preserved in stories, rituals, landscapes, monuments, and texts, which act as substrates. It flows through communities and cultures, demonstrating connectivity. And it evolves because every culture is receptive and has the agency to interpret, expand, and build upon what came before. Knowledge clearly has, as mentioned before, remarkable longevity. By exploring these stories, we see clearly that the concept of knowledge as a universal structuring force isn't entirely new or abstract. It's actually deeply rooted in humanity's oldest intuitions and traditions, and beautifully aligns with the cutting-edge science we're discovering today. Now, Archie and listener, I want to be clear about something important. We're not claiming that all these ancient cultures had it right in a scientific sense, or that their cosmologies are literally true.
Good point. So what are we saying then?
There's a fascinating observation. Cultures separated by vast distances and time periods independently developed remarkably similar intuitions about knowledge as a living, organizing force. These convergent patterns might tell us something profound about how humans naturally perceive knowledge, and possibly hint at something deeper about reality itself.
Ah, so it's less about validating specific beliefs and more about recognizing universal patterns in human understanding.
Exactly. These diverse traditions might be picking up on the same underlying signal, just interpreting it through their own cultural lenses. That's what makes this exploration so compelling.
So in short, Mark, the reason we explore these ancient echoes and modern ideas is because it reveals knowledge as a possible powerful evolutionary force that's been driving complexity and understanding throughout human history, and potentially far beyond.
You've nailed it, Archie. And listeners, keep this idea in mind as we journey through these fascinating stories. Let's dive in.
Let's begin our exploration with some of the oldest continuous cultures on Earth.
Yes, Let's do that. First, we'll turn our attention to the Aboriginal Australian Dreamtime. Think about it. The Aboriginal tradition in Australia is considered one of the oldest continuous cultures in the world. According to the latest archaeological and genetic research, Aboriginal culture dates back at least 60,000 to 65,000 years.
The Aboriginal Dreamtime. Tell us more. Could you elaborate on that for our listeners?
The Dreamtime, in many Indigenous Australian traditions, isn't just a past era. It's an eternal, ever-present reality where the past, present, and future coexist. It's a sacred continuum that encodes knowledge within the very landscapes. Ancestral spirits in the dreaming created the world and established laws, and these truths are preserved and passed on through songs, stories, and rituals, often referred to as songlines.
Interesting. So knowledge is literally mapped onto the land.
Precisely. Knowledge, in this context, is an ancestral inheritance, continually renewed as each generation retraces the pathways, or songlines, of their forebears. This creates an unbroken circle, where even as individuals perish, their wisdom lives on in the land and oral lore, effectively making knowledge immortal. Think of it as a timeless structuring principle, deeply embedded in the landscape itself.
That's a powerful image of knowledge as both enduring and foundational. What about other Indigenous cultures?
Well, yes, now we are going to move across the globe. Let's take a look at the Native American cyclical cosmologies. Many Native American cultures also emphasize cyclical time and the continuity of wisdom, although specific dating is highly variable by tribe, but generally before 1492, that is, before Columbus's first voyage and the beginning of significant European contact and colonization in the Americas. They, instead of a linear timeline, Indigenous North American traditions often speak of life as a sacred hoop or circle, where seasons, lives, and events repeat in a natural rhythm.
Can you give us an example?
Let's take a closer look at the Lakota Medicine Wheel, or the Hopi Cycles. The Lakota Medicine Wheel is a symbol that represents the cyclical nature of existence and the interconnectedness of all things. It is a sacred circle used to illustrate the ongoing cycle of life, death, and rebirth, as well as the balance and harmony between the physical and spiritual realms. The wheel's four directions symbolize fundamental aspects and energies of life, and its teachings emphasize holistic well-being and unity with nature. Also, the Hopi traditions describe recurring cycles of creation, destruction, and renewal. The Hopi worldview is deeply cyclical, with beliefs centered on the universe passing through repeating world ages, each ending with a cataclysm and renewal. Their ceremonies and spiritual practices are closely tied to these cycles, emphasizing balance, harmony, and the interconnectedness of all beings. In both, the transfer and growth of knowledge in these Indigenous cultures is a living, adaptive process that combines the wisdom of elders with the experiences and innovations of younger generations, ensuring cultural survival, resilience, and relevance across time.
So it's not just about repetition, but about renewal.
Exactly. Each cycle is an opportunity to learn from the past and to renew one's understanding of the world. Elders impart teachings through oral traditions, ensuring memory never truly dies. Stories of creation, ancestors, and past ages are retold so that each new generation inherits the collective experience of those before. This resonates strongly with the knowledge force hypothesis, highlighting knowledge as a driving force behind cyclical renewal.
Very interesting. Now, what about traditions from Europe?
For that, we will move across the globe and through time to old European tribal traditions. The Neolithic period, roughly between 4800 and 1700 BCE, that means before Common Era, which is just a neutral way to say those years are counted backwards from year one in our calendar system. Anyhow, so in that period, we find a similar emphasis on seasonal cycles and renewal rituals. Think of the solstices and equinoxes, celebrated with gatherings and ceremonies that marked the changing of the seasons. These moments of balance and transition were deeply significant for agricultural communities who depended on the rhythms of nature for survival and prosperity. There are some very well-known megalithic structures like Stonehenge in England and Newgrange in Ireland.
Stonehenge, Newgrange, how does that fit in?
These monumental sites were not only feats of engineering, but also spiritual centers, carefully aligned with the movements of the sun. At Newgrange, for example, the inner chamber is illuminated by the sunrise only during the winter solstice, marking the return of the light and the promise of renewal. At Stonehenge, archaeological evidence suggests that people traveled from across the British Isles to gather for large feasts and ceremonies during the winter solstice, celebrating the turning point of the year. But here's the thing, Stonehenge and Newgrange, they're just scratching the surface. When you start looking across Europe, you realize our ancestors were absolutely obsessed with marking time through stone and sunlight. Take a trip to Brittany in France, and you'll find La Roche-aux-Fays, this massive stone gallery grave from around 3000 BCE. And get this, its entrance catches the sunrise perfectly at winter solstice. Sound familiar? Up in Denmark, there's the Ravhøj Passage Grave, built around 3200 BCE. It has this tall burial chamber covered in carvings that archaeologists think might be related to sun worship. We're seeing a pattern here, right? Now, if you want something really dramatic, head to Sardinia. The Monte Su Necropolis is like this natural amphitheater, carved right into the rock, decorated with spirals and bullhorns, symbols of fertility and regeneration. It's absolutely breathtaking. And in southern Sweden, we've got the Kivik King's Grave. Picture a massive burial mound with stones carved with people, animals, and, you guessed it, the sun. It's like a window into Bronze Age ritual life. Portugal has its own treasure, the Almendres Cromlech. This is one of the oldest stone circles in Europe, with dozens of standing stones that almost certainly tracked celestial events. But if you want to see standing stones, I mean really see standing stones, you have to visit Karnak in Brittany. We're talking about the largest collection in the world, some dating back to 4500 BCE. It's mind-blowing. Newgrange, by the way, has some neighbors worth mentioning. Noth in Douth. They're covered in this incredible megalithic art, and just like their famous sibling, they're oriented to capture light at specific times of year. Even in the Netherlands, in this region called Drenthe, you'll find these things called honeybedden, large stone burial chambers just dotting the landscape. They're like silent witnesses to ancient rituals we can only imagine. All these sites remind us that ancient European societies, though lacking written language, developed sophisticated ways to observe the heavens, honor their ancestors, and celebrate the cycles of life and nature. Their monumental architecture and ritual gatherings speak to a worldview where community, memory, and the turning of the seasons were woven together in stone. So, Archie, what do you think the common thread is?
Well, it seems pretty clear, doesn't it? Our ancestors had this deep, almost obsessive connection to marking and preserving knowledge, especially knowledge about celestial cycles, seasons, and the movement of time. It's like they wanted to embed their understanding permanently in stone and sunlight.
Yes, and that's exactly where this connects beautifully to the knowledge force hypothesis. Remember how we define knowledge in our hypothesis? Adaptive structure-forming information that increases a system's capacity to predict, survive, and reshape its environment?
Right. So you're saying these ancient people weren't just randomly building stone structures. They were actively structuring and encoding knowledge into their environment.
Indeed, every site we just mentioned served as a physical substrate for knowledge. The stones themselves, aligned perfectly with solstices and equinoxes, were preserving essential information, knowledge about seasons, planting cycles, and survival itself.
Got it. and by embedding knowledge into these massive stone structures, they achieved remarkable longevity, ensuring their insights lasted far beyond their own lifetimes. That ticks off the longevity factor from our Srackle framework too, right?
With an open mind, absolutely. And these weren't isolated monuments. They were places for communities to gather, share stories, and reinforce their collective understanding. There's your connectivity. The people who built them were receptive to new insights from the skies, and they had agency. They actively shaped their landscape based on this knowledge.
So it's all there, isn't it? The knowledge force hypothesis helps us see these sites not just as mysterious monuments, but as active expressions of human interaction with a universal force of knowledge.
Through the lens of our thought experiment, that's pretty profound, Archie. These ancient structures remind us that the impulse to understand, preserve, and transmit knowledge isn't something new. It's a deep, fundamental drive that's been guiding human creativity and survival for thousands of years.
That's so beautifully put. These places truly embody the idea of knowledge as a fundamental force that shapes reality. Great.
Now, let's transport ourselves from ancient Europe into African cosmologies, beginning with ancient Egypt.
Ah, yes, Egypt, the land of pharaohs and pyramids. How does Egyptian cosmology tie into the knowledge force hypothesis?
Well, ancient Egyptian cosmology was deeply centered on Maat, the principle of cosmic order, truth, justice, and harmony. Maat was established at creation and needed constant reaffirmation through ritual and righteous living. Their sophisticated understanding of astronomy was integral to maintaining this cosmic order.
So knowledge of the cosmos was seen as essential for maintaining balance in the world?
Precisely. The Egyptians saw the universe as cyclical, with the daily journey of the sun god Ra and the annual inundation of the Nile reflecting larger patterns of renewal and rebirth. Astronomical knowledge, evident in temple alignments and the Sothic cycle, was integral to their understanding of cosmic order and the afterlife.
Fascinating. What other African cosmologies reflect this emphasis on knowledge?
Consider the Dogon people of Mali, whose cosmology, developed from the 15th century CE onwards, centers around the star Sirius and the periodic Sigui ceremony. They possess advanced knowledge of the Sirius star system, including its binary nature, which is quite remarkable.
That's incredible. How did they acquire such detailed astronomical knowledge so early on?
That's a question that continues to intrigue researchers, Archie. Regardless of the origin, the Dogon cosmology emphasizes the transmission of foundational knowledge and celebrates the renewal of the world. So we can see this as another example of structured cosmic knowledge shaping a culture's worldview and practices. Let's look at the connection to our knowledge force hypothesis here. Ancient Egyptians and also the Dogon of Mali both recognize knowledge, particularly astronomical and cosmological, as fundamental, actively shaping their rituals, culture, and society. They understood knowledge as something that must be continuously reaffirmed, transmitted, and embedded within their community, embodying precisely the elements we've been exploring: substrate, temples, rituals, receptivity, keen astronomical observation, agency, ritual practices, connectivity, community transmission, and longevity, passing knowledge across generations. These cultures intuitively grasped that maintaining and evolving their knowledge wasn't just about survival, it was about aligning with the underlying force structuring their universe.
That's a powerful insight, Mark. It really emphasizes that this idea of knowledge as a universal force isn't new. It's deeply rooted across diverse traditions.
And that's why exploring these ancient cosmologies matters. They show us a consistent pattern of human societies actively engaging with knowledge as something fundamental, dynamic, and deeply interconnected with existence itself.
Up until now, it has been a fascinating journey. Let's proceed and move from Africa across the Atlantic to the ancient Americas, exploring Mesoamerican and South American echoes. What specific civilizations are we talking about again?
We are referring to the Mayan, Aztec, and Incan civilizations, each of which developed sophisticated worldviews deeply intertwined with knowledge.
Okay, so let's start with the Maya.
Here, also, the ancient Maya developed highly sophisticated calendrical and astronomical systems, reflecting a worldview deeply imbued with cosmic cycles and the power of recorded knowledge. Think about where we observed that as well. The Mayan calendars, like the Long Count, were intricately interwoven to track vast expanses of time, predict astronomical events, and schedule rituals.
So knowledge was directly linked to their understanding of time and cosmic events?
Yes. Take a look at the Dresden Codex. One of the few surviving Maya books contains detailed astronomical tables and calculations, demonstrating a profound understanding of celestial mechanics and its connection to earthly affairs. This accumulated knowledge, seen as vital for maintaining cosmic and social order, was meticulously recorded and passed down.
And what about the Aztecs? How did they perceive knowledge and its role in the cosmos?
Well, Archie, the Aztecs also had cyclical views of the world. They possessed sacred calendars and renewal rituals, which tied directly into their cosmology. These were used to maintain cosmic order and appease the gods.
Makes sense. We've covered the Mayas, the Aztecs. Now, what about the Incas?
The Inca Empire, Tahuantinsuyu, conceived of a cosmos structured by interconnected realms, heaven, earth, and the underworld, and organized by intricate systems of astronomical observation and symbolic representation. Knowledge, particularly of cosmic cycles and ancestral traditions, was crucial for imperial administration and the maintenance of cosmic balance.
And how does that connect to the knowledge force hypothesis?
This emphasis on cyclical renewal and the use of knowledge rituals to maintain cosmic balance highlights knowledge as a structuring force. So whether we're looking at the precise astronomy of the Maya, the cyclical rituals of the Aztecs, or the Incan structuring of cosmic realms and knowledge pathways, what we see again and again is that knowledge wasn't passive. It was living, sacred, and essential to keeping their worlds in balance.
What you're saying is that in all three civilizations, knowledge was tied to the cosmos and was passed on with great care, embedded in calendars, rituals, and sacred stories. It was how they stayed aligned with the universe.
And that brings us full circle, Archie, because if we zoom out a bit and look at everything we've covered so far, from ancient European monuments and African cosmologies to Aboriginal Dreamtime and now the Americas, there's this unmistakable thread.
Yeah, the pattern becomes clearer for me. Knowledge isn't just practical or cultural, it's cosmological. It's treated as a force that needs to be preserved, renewed, and aligned with. Something that exists beyond the individual, and even beyond the present.
And tying that to the knowledge force hypothesis, these ancient echoes all point to the idea that knowledge has always been more than data or memory. It's been seen as a fundamental process woven into the very structure of existence, driving evolution, continuity, and connection.
So as we move into the next part of our journey, we'll keep tracing how this invisible thread, this knowledge force, has shown up in different forms across time, space, and systems, from myth to mathematics.
Let's keep going. We now venture to time spanning roughly from 600 BCE to 1400 CE and take a step into the realm of classical philosophies.
That sounds like this section brings us to some well-known philosophical traditions. Where shall we begin?
Greek philosophy, of course, particularly focusing on the Stoics in Heraclitus. Heraclitus spoke of the logos as the universal formula or measure guiding all change and unifying opposites, suggesting an underlying rational structure to reality. Knowledge, for Heraclitus, meant understanding this common logos. The Stoics later developed this concept, viewing the logos as a divine, active, and rational principle that pervades and governs the cosmos. This resonates strongly with the knowledge force hypothesis. And what's especially interesting, Archie, is that this framing puts the pursuit of knowledge on a continuum, not just with science and logic, but with cosmic alignment. The Stoics weren't just talking about ethics or behavior. They were making a metaphysical claim. To live wisely is to live in accordance with the Logos, that rational, structuring force of the cosmos, which ties directly into our hypothesis. If knowledge is a fundamental force, like gravity or electromagnetism, then what Heraclitus and the Stoics sensed might have been early glimpses of the same phenomenon we're trying to model in our thought experiment. They weren't just using poetic language. They really believed this structuring force existed at the core of reality. With that, they recognized knowledge as more than content. It was structure, pattern, order. That makes their views incredibly relevant, even millennia later, to how we frame the knowledge force as formative and universal. Moving along from the classic Greeks, let's explore China.
Okay, wow, we're really traveling the globe here. What aspects of Chinese thought are relevant here?
We'll look at Chinese Taoism, specifically focusing on the concept of Tao as an inherent universal organizing force.
I see. The Tao, as the fundamental way of the universe, could be interpreted as a form of what? Knowledge?
Yes, Archie. Although the Tao eludes precise definition, it represents the natural order and the source of all things, governing their transformations through spontaneous processes. This again aligns with the knowledge force hypothesis's notion of a directional, pervasive current driving the universe towards patterned complexity.
So knowledge itself, in this view, is yet again a structuring principle of the cosmos.
Yes, and we see similar ideas in Indian philosophy. Let's take a closer look and find out what we can observe there.
Indian philosophy. What might resonate with the knowledge force hypothesis?
There we find concepts like Ritta and Samkhya. Ritta represents the principle of cosmic order and truth, a universal lawfulness governing the workings of the universe and human life. Samkhya philosophy describes the evolution of the cosmos from a primordial, undifferentiated matrix through a series of transformations, ultimately leading to the emergence of intellect and cognitive capacities.
I'm hearing familiar observations. It sounds like these ancient Indian philosophies also viewed the universe as evolving towards cognitive complexity.
Yes, through our lens, this structured evolution of cosmic and cognitive principles aligns beautifully with the knowledge force hypothesis.
The picture is getting clearer, and that's fascinating. Finally, what about the Arabic, Islamic Golden Age?
Yes, let's talk about a different kind of cosmic alignment, this time in human intellect. The Islamic Golden Age, roughly 800 to 1400 CE, the period when the House of Wisdom in Baghdad became the intellectual heart of the world. Scholars of all faiths, Muslim, Jewish, Christian, came together to translate and build on ancient knowledge from Greece, Persia, India, and Egypt. In the House of Wisdom, they didn't just preserve knowledge, they energized it. Think of Al-Khwarizmi, who laid the groundwork for algebra, or Ibn Sina, whose medical texts influenced both East and West for centuries.
And astronomers like Al-Battani, who refined solar year calculations, this wasn't passive learning. It was experimentation, expansion, iteration. They treated knowledge as something dynamic and evolving.
Which ties right into the knowledge force hypothesis. What we're seeing here is knowledge as an active structure, passed on, questioned, evolved. It's not just content, it's a system that gains force through collaboration and curiosity. It is the knowledge force in action, a network of minds building on each other across cultures and time. Archie, let's leap into the 20th and 21st centuries, where modern cosmology eerily echoes ancient cyclical worldviews. Ready to connect quantum physics with our knowledge force hypothesis?
Absolutely. Where should we start?
Let's open with Sir Roger Penrose's conformal cyclic cosmology. He proposes our Big Bang wasn't a true beginning, it was a conformal continuation of a prior universe that had expanded into an ultra-smooth, near-empty state.
Whoa, cyclic universes? How's that relate to knowledge as a cosmic force?
Penrose suggests gravitational waves from the previous cosmos imprint structural seeds onto the new universe. It's cosmic inheritance, information like gravitational fingerprints passing between aeons. Essentially, the universe retains knowledge of its past form.
So structure begets structure, like a cosmic lineage. What about Lee Smolin's take?
Smolin's cosmological natural selection is even bolder. He theorizes that black holes act as cosmic wounds, birthing new universes with slightly tweaked physical constants. Universes better at making black holes reproduce more.
So, like cosmic evolution, survival of the fittest, but for universes?
You can say that, yes. It implies a learning cosmos. Universes that know how to efficiently create black holes dominate the multiverse. Now, pivot to Stephen Hawking's black hole information paradox.
Does information vanish in black holes? I've heard debates.
Once thought lost, we now suspect information persists, scrambled but conserved, like Schrödinger's negentropy concept. While entropy drives disorder, life in black holes create islands of order by feeding on negative entropy.
So black holes aren't just destroyers, they're knowledge conservators?
Precisely. This mirrors complexity science. Self-organizing systems, from cells to galaxies, defy entropy through adaptive knowledge structures. Which brings us full circle to our hypothesis.
Let me try to bring this all together. Synthesize it. Penrose's cosmic memory, Smolin's evolutionary universes, Hawking's preserved information, Schrödinger's negentropy.
All point to knowledge as a fundamental cosmic force, not metaphorically, literally. Like gravity, it structures reality. Consider the pattern. Aboriginal Dreamtime, Egyptian Mayat, Mayan calendars, ancient scholarly knowledge, and modern physics all converge here.
So the knowledge force hypothesis isn't just philosophical, it's a framework, a lens uniting ancient intuition and cutting-edge science. Across time and culture, from megalithic temples to black holes, we keep encountering the same pattern. Knowledge as structure, memory, order, persistence.
And that's exactly why we're doing this. The knowledge force hypothesis gives us a way to connect the dots from ancient cosmologies to quantum mechanics. Not as scattered curiosities, but as echoes of a deeper pattern. A force that existed before us, moves through us, and beyond us. Thanks for listening. If this sparks something in you, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. Share this bold idea with a curious friend, leave a review to join the journey or to challenge it. Join me next week as we push the idea further. Until then, let's rethink everything.